Presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I went on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday. A little bit of a reaction to some of the stuff that I had to say there. Totally unplanned, totally unintended, but there was a little bit of a pushback on some of that from various factions around the SEC. We'll deal with a lot of that kind of stuff later on in the program. There is something more important than that to get to here off the top. There was the announcement yesterday about G-Day. Now, let me say this, you know, before we kind of get into anything else. I am a big fan of G-Day. Always have loved it. I think we're kind of in an era now where spring football games, I don't know if this is true yet at Georgia, but it seems to be true kind of nationally that these spring games are de-emphasized. They're not as important as they used to be. Coaches like the practices more so than the actual scrimmage. But I'm always going to be a fan of the spring games. I like Georgia's. I like the other SEC teams. I just like the idea of that little bit of taste of real college football during the spring. It's not as good as what you see during September, October, November, but it's better than nothing, so I'm excited about April 20th. We've known that was going to be the date for the G-Day game for a while, but the UGA Athletics Department tweeted out yesterday an additional detail on this. We now know the time as well, 2 p.m. Between the Hedges on April 20th for the 2019 version of G-Day. Now, if we do this show on video every day, many of you listen on the radio or you listen to the podcast, so you don't see what happens after we go off the air, but we stay on the air live is just kind of a way of kind of chit-chatting with whoever's commenting and just kind of react to what's going on. And I kind of made my case yesterday for why I think the G-Day is important, because I think that Georgia's got a quarterback question to answer. Now, Jake Fromm's facing a slew of questions going into this season. We'll obviously, over the course of the spring and summer months, address a lot of this. Does he become that first-round pick quarterback? Does he become that true Heisman contender? Those are big issues for Fromm individually to face, and obviously those kinds of things are going to get more national attention, and we'll focus on those here as well on Dog Nation Daily. But there is another intriguing question, I think, facing Georgia quarterbacks this offseason that has nothing to do with Jake Fromm. And it's one of those things that I do think can be answered as you head towards G-Day. It involves who Georgia's backup quarterback is going to be. Now, I realize that that's not necessarily the sexiest topic to kind of get into, but when it comes to Georgia and its pursuit of a national championship, having a capable backup quarterback is certainly an important thing. Now, by capable, I don't mean Justin Fields. Georgia does not have a Justin Fields on this year's roster. It was an incredible luxury a year ago for Georgia to have a guy like Fromm and a backup like Fields, who was as capable as he was. It looks like Fields is just going to waltz in and become the starting quarterback at Ohio State. That's the kind of quarterback depth that Georgia had a year ago. Make no bones about it, Georgia will not have that level of depth at the position in 2019. But having someone that could step in the short term and provide a little bit of a bridge to maybe hopefully a healthy return for Jake Fromm, that could matter. And right now, that conversation would seem to center around the two quarterbacks that are vying for that number two job at Georgia, Dwan Mathis, that Georgia signs out of high school and back in December for its 2019 class, and Stetson Bennett, who's making something of a triumphant return to UGA after having been the non-scholarship scout team quarterback on the 2017 team, the one that went to the Rose Bowl, and Bennett was largely praised for the work that he did getting Georgia ready for that. So Mathis versus Bennett is not exactly the same thing as Ali versus Frazier, or, you know, whatever other, you know, heavyweight matchup you want to tout here, but it could have some interest for Georgia fans, specifically as we learn more about these two guys. One of the things you already love about Dwan Mathis, and Mathis sat for an interview from his home in Michigan with our Mike Griffith, who will join us, by the way, a little later on here today on Dog Nation Daily, and already the personality of Mathis is something that you really like, even if you're just now learning a bit about what he brings to the table as a quarterback. First of all, in terms of the proper, I guess, appreciation for what's going on at Georgia, Mathis certainly seems to have that. You get the impression that he's coming to Georgia to learn and grow and develop. You know, he's not necessarily coming in here to look and try to wrest away the starting job for Jake Fromm right away, because I think he has an appreciation for what Fromm has become as a quarterback. So in terms of having the right mindset to be the backup quarterback for UGA, Mathis certainly seems to have that. In fact, here is what he told our buddy Mike Griffith back in Michigan when he right after he signed with Georgia about how he kind of views his potential role here at UGA. Here is Mathis on that topic.
Really, I'm just coming in to work and put my head down and do what I'm supposed to do. I'm not coming in to, of course I'm going to compete, but I'm not coming in to just try to push Jake Fromm out the way and take his job, because, of course, the chance of that happening are very low. He, as soon as he came in, he went straight to the national championship and played for a national championship. A game that a lot of people thought they were going to win to the very end, came down to the last wire. But really, when I come in, I'm just coming in to work hard and do what I'm supposed to do and learn what I can from Jake Fromm and see where that can take me.
You know, I think that mindset from Mathis, I think that can take him pretty far. I think that's the kind of thing that he can use to really develop himself here. I think there is something to be gained from watching. And next year, Mathis, whether he's the backup quarterback, the number three quarterback, whatever, is going to do a good bit of watching at Georgia. But watching is also an opportunity to learn. And coming in and trying to be a part of a team concept and grow in that regard is something I think can help him. Plus, when you take those words from Mathis and you combine that with what else he has said, it gives you a more full and complete picture of who he could be as a quarterback. Obviously, from those words, you come away thinking Mathis is a guy that's got a good dose of humility. This is not a guy that's necessarily sort of overstating, you know, who he is, what he's capable of doing. This is a guy that comes looking to be a part of a team concept and not, you know, kind of trying to come in and take over in year one. But don't confuse that, the sort of humble description of how he kind of sees himself as a backup quarterback, with someone who's not confident in his own abilities. And as a sort of fan of football, you like this. You like a guy that's confident in himself, but also not, I guess, delusional about how things are going to work out for him in his first year. So you hear there the humility, but in terms of being asked about, you know, what kind of skill set do you bring to the table, you also hear the perfect complement to that humility, which is a great deal of confidence that this is indeed a young man that can play football at the SEC level. Here's a little more from Dwan Mathis.
Really just my ability to make plays. I mean, outside, the play could break down. And with me just having my ability and my God-given talents, man, God just blessed me with some different kind of stuff that I can do outside of the pocket. I can make any throw. I can throw any ball, and that's just the biggest thing.
Yeah, listen, I mean, that's what you want. I mean, a guy that references athletic ability, he can get to the outside, he can, you know, keep plays alive, but he says he can also make every throw. I think, honestly, in terms of, you know, my evaluation to the extent that means anything in talking about what Mathis might be as a player, I see that throwing motion and making those throws as the thing he's going to be working to grow and develop over the course of his time at Georgia. The athleticism, as Mathis says, already seems to be there. But once again, no Georgia fan, nor Kirby Smart, nor James Coley is asking Dwan Mathis, hopefully, at least assuming the worst-case scenario can be avoided, they're not asking Dwan Mathis to lead the entire team for an entire season. They're asking him to be a capable backup if Jake Fromm's mouthpiece comes out, or if the helmet comes flying off, or if he tweaks something during a game. That's the role that Dwan Mathis could fill, and he's already got the athleticism to at least be an intriguing possibility when it comes to that. But then you also get to Stetson Bennett. And Bennett's one of those guys whose best work has largely happened behind closed doors. As a scout team quarterback, away from the watchful eye of the media, apparently last year, now more than a season ago, after the 2017 season, the lead up to the Rose Bowl, Bennett made himself quite a legend in UGA practice circles with the way that he emulated quarterbacks like Baker Mayfield. He was certainly very impressive to many of the Georgia defenders. It's amazing how much they praised him and how excited they all were when Bennett came back into the fold as a scholarship quarterback during December. Kirby Smart has let us in on this a little bit as into the guy that's now going to be competing with Dwan Mathis, at least the appearance of pushing for that backup quarterback job. Kirby Smart has talked in the past about some of the things that he does like about Stetson Bennett, and presumably why Bennett, already knowing the Georgia offense, is also a little bit of a competitor here for that number two quarterback's job. Here's what Kirby has said about that.
I don't know. I think last year, you know, with no Bryce, you felt like there was not a three there evident. I think Stetson, being that he's done what he did through fall camp, the season being the scout team guy, and then the bowl practices getting the work, I feel like we got three guys there that are really competing and doing a good job.
So listen to that now. The context of that, I think, is really interesting. In talking about Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, two guys who were very heralded. Fields, you know, at one point I was number one player of the 2018 class. Fromm was a returning starter and a elite recruit himself in the 2017 class. And what Kirby Smart's saying, hey, don't forget this is a three-man quarterback competition, or a three-man quarterback conversation. Maybe conversation is a better word than competition. He wants to kind of shoehorn Stetson Bennett into that. Now, obviously, as it turns out, Bennett doesn't stay at the University first year of Georgia. He leaves to go to the JUCO route because he wanted to be a scholarship quarterback somewhere. Now, he ends up back at Georgia on scholarship, but before Bennett decided to leave and kind of pursue his own goals, thinking his best chance to play was going to be somewhere else, Kirby had also said they were trying to do what they could do to keep Bennett in the fold. Bennett may have left, but Kirby didn't want him to leave. In fact, here's what Kirby did say about that.
We need to keep Stetson there and help us. We don't really have many other guys beyond Stetson. We've got two young quarterbacks coming in. They're going to be walk-ons that we think are good players. But we've invested a lot in Stetson with the development he took this spring and what he did in bowl practices, and excited to see what he can do. And we're encouraging him to stay so that he gets that opportunity. But I certainly respect what he's done this far for the University of Georgia. And he's a really good student as well. So we're selling him on the University of Georgia education.
So they say we've invested a lot in Stetson Bennett. At the time, it looked like that investment might be for nothing. As it turns out now, though, that investment may still pay off. Here is the overall bottom line for me, though. When you look at what Georgia needs from its number two quarterback in 2019, it doesn't need a Justin Fields, and it's not going to get one. What it needs is a little bit more like a Chase Brice. You know who that guy is? The Clemson backup quarterback, at least one of the guys in the fold there for Clemson, who kind of comes in and plays and a short-term situation. Remember the Syracuse game back in September? Clemson could have lost that game there that day. Lawrence leaves with an injury. Brice comes in, and you know they finally squeak out, and they sort of eke out a win, and they're able to preserve an undefeated season. It goes on to be a national championship. Georgia might be in a similar situation in 2019. And if Fromm has to leave a game in that regard, you want to know that there's at least somebody that can kind of hold down the fort for a half a game or three quarters of a game or whatever. And maybe between Dwan Mathis and Stetson Bennett, one of those guys will end up being that. My name is Brandon Adams. It's Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thank you for being with us. Live today on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, or the Dog Nation Twitter feed. We're also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we're in podcast form wherever podcasts can be found. The Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player for the Android devices. Or we post the show every day at the worldfamousdognation.com. We're just really glad to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today. And would love to see you live and in person a little less than a week from today as we, for the first time ever, headed towards Kennesaw, Georgia, the Marlowe's Tavern there, for our countdown to signing day event next Tuesday, starting at 6 p.m. as we get ready for National Signing Day. Jeff Sintel, terrific insight that he's provided at all these Marlowe's broadcasts over the course of the last few weeks, and this one may be the biggest yet, coming up this upcoming Tuesday from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Marlowe's Tavern in Kennesaw. The address is 745 Chastain Road in Kennesaw. Once again, that's 745 Chastain Road in Kennesaw from 6 to 8 p.m. coming up this Tuesday for our countdown to signing day event. That is going to be an incredible thing. Here on Dog Nation Daily today, in just a couple of minutes, we'll go live to Mobile, Alabama. We'll catch up with our buddy Mike Griffith. Mike, to his credit, cautioned Georgia fans a week ago to remain patient and remain calm about the hire of a defensive backs coach. As it turns out, Mike may have been prophetic on that, that the patience that Georgia showed would seem to have been rewarded, and certainly I guess he deserves a little bit of a pat on the back for the calming influence that he was a week ago. We'll do with that with him coming up. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse. Here today, brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and there are a couple of things I want to make you aware of before we move on with the show. You know, I just talked a moment ago a good bit about the backup quarterback situation in Georgia and what Georgia might be able to do this year and why G-Day might be an interesting opportunity to kind of see how that race is developing between Mathis and Bennett as the guy behind Jake Fromm next season. I also thought there was an interesting thing at ESPN.com the other day, and at some point in time I may do more on this, but what ESPN wrote is essentially that 2019 has a chance to be the year of the quarterback. Alex Scarborough is the writer on this, and Jake Fromm's obviously prominently mentioned in that, and the suggestion that Fromm is on his way to a first round draft pick kind of culmination of his college career is also mentioned. And yet within the same context, a lot of other quarterbacks are mentioned in this story before you get to Jake Fromm. Not just the guys you would expect, like Trevor Lawrence, but also guys that you kind of scratch your head about. Guys like Ian Book, for instance, from Notre Dame, or Jalen Hurts now at Oklahoma. It's almost like Fromm is simultaneously highly regarded and underrated at the same time. And that's one of the things that I think is going to make Fromm a very interesting figure in this upcoming 2019 season. There's a lot of possibility out there for him. He could be a Heisman finalist. He could be one day a first-round draft pick. But there's also, I think, probably fair to say. I don't know if it's skepticism or if it's just maybe a level of more attention being paid to other quarterbacks. But watching how Fromm factors in that conversation going forward, I do think is going to be a really fascinating thing to see. And at some point in time, we may dive into that a little more deeply. But I at least wanted to mention that here on the program today. Also, as we go around the doghouse presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, let me also make mention of something I saw as a recruiting note. This is also probably worth following a little bit. 24/7 Sports has done their re-rank of their own individual rankings for the first, like, you know, 30 or so players in the country. And that has impacted Georgia a little bit. Nolan Smith does drop a little bit in their individual rankings, but not so much so that he's going to lose the overall number one player in the country. The 24/7 Sports composite, he's going to hold on to that as the number one player in the country. Really impressive to see the way that Trayvon Walker rose up the ranks, though. According to the individual 24/7 rankings, not the composite rankings, but the individual rankings, Walker's now the number five player in the country. So 24/7 showing a lot of love to Walker. And it's also nice to see Tyreek Stevenson climbing the rankings here. 24/7 most recently, but I think also Rivals as well. There's a pretty good chance that Stevenson walks away with this as a composite five-star, right? I mean, mathematically, he's very close to being that. And that'd be a pretty good coup for the 2019 signing class for Georgia to see Stevenson climbing up the ranks there. So that's kind of a nice thing to see. I guess there's also a chance that maybe Dominic Blaylock ends up as a four-star composite receiver here too, but I don't think that changed the way that Dog fans feel about him. But we are in that sort of re-rank season as those final ratings do come out. So we'll keep updating you on that here around Dog Nation Daily as well. Speaking of Engineered Solutions of Georgia, they bring around the doghouse to you. And by now, you know what they do. It's foundation repair. It's basement waterproofing. It's crawl space encapsulation. And they really offer a lifetime of support because of the expertise they bring to the table. So if you've got a crack foundation or a wet basement or a damp crawl space, you're going to want to have one of their qualified technicians come out and really check you out and make sure that they can get your house back to the working order that it needs to be in. So the phone number to remember for that is 678-ESOG now. It's 678-ESOG now. Come out and have one of their qualified technicians take a look for you. They're the only foundation repair company the Dog Nation would trust because they're the only ones that have a full-time engineer on staff. So please check out Engineered Solutions of Georgia by calling 678-ESOG now. It's great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. We'll have some fun with my Feinbaum appearance a little later on the program. For now, though, in Mobile, Alabama, with Senior Bowl stuff, aftermath of the Charlton Warren hire, and a whole lot more, let's talk to Mike Griffith right now.
Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Mike Griffith joins us from the Gulf Coast here down in Mobile, Alabama, where the Senior Bowl practices are going on this week. Game, I guess, comes up this weekend. Mike, we'll get into that coming up here in just a moment. I did want to tell you, though, that before you joined us, I gave you a little bit of a compliment. You know, a week ago when you were on our program, you were very much a calming influence over many Georgia fans. You said, hey, don't sweat this defensive backs coach hire. Don't get too worried about that. Your impression was you didn't think Smart himself was all that worried about it, that Georgia would eventually make the hire that it needed to make. And after the weekend in which Charlton Warren becomes that name, he becomes the defensive backs coach, and the manner with which it's announced, with Warren on, I should say, with a four-star defensive back, Kyra Lam, on campus to hear the news, certainly would seem like your words end up proving prophetic. What did you make of Charlton Warren being added to the fold as Georgia's defensive backs coach?
Well, I think it's a great hire. You know, most of all, Kirby's got to find a guy that he's comfortable with. I mean, there's a lot of talented defensive backs coach out there. You know, we talked a lot about Derek Ansley, you know, the Oakland Raiders secondary coach, and you know he's in demand in the couple Big Ten schools, and now maybe even Alabama might take another look at Derek Ansley. We'll see how that works out. But, you know, Charlton Warren's a guy, you look at it, he's about Kirby's age. Kirby's 43, Charlton's 41. They're both, you know, high IQ guys. Kirby was an all-academic, all-SEC guy as well as an all-SEC safety. Charlton Warren was at the Air Force Academy. They only take the best there. They're both players. You know, Charlton helped Air Force win 10 games or more 2 years in a row. Obviously, we saw what Kirby did at Georgia. So there's a lot of similarities there in terms of these guys' backgrounds, their level of achievement, and who they are. And, you know, when they ran across one another on the recruiting trail last week, it was after, actually, the rumors that there had been an interview there. There hadn't at that point. And I almost wonder if that was the conversation starter. And, you know, once Kirby sat down with Charlton, he really liked what he had to say. And, And why not? You know, you look at where Charlton's been and everything that he's done, the level of discipline that it brings, you know, just his nickname, Mr. Intensity. You know, it sounds exactly like what George is going to want in the secondary as far as the discipline and the focus. And a guy that Kirby Smart's got to spend a lot of time with, B.A.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And there are a couple things from this I want to get into. You mentioned the Air Force pedigree in terms of, you know, both attending the Air Force Academy, but also being kind of brought up within the service ranks himself. And, Mike, I think that's a really interesting thing to add into the mix at Georgia. If you go back and listen to the Charlton Warren press conference that he did when he was first hired at Florida, now we probably won't get one of those here at UGA, but he was introduced to the media at Florida, and he went into pretty good detail about, you know, what the impact of military service had had on his life. And boy, when he talks about those things and you look at the overall background of a guy that's really had his hand in a lot of big stuff, also kind of a business minded guy there as well, some mamas and daddies are going to really like that when it comes to sending their young men to play for the University of Georgia. And I think legitimately, beyond the fact that it's pretty good optics, I think it also has the chance to actually legitimately, tangibly benefit the young men who are in his care here at UGA. I do think that Air Force connection that he has is a pretty cool thing to have a part of the Georgia program.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, and the fact that he's from Atlanta as well, I mean, he's going to be able to relate to a lot of these Georgia kids. I believe he went to Forest High School. And, you know, B.A., I look at what these student-athletes go through now in terms of the time management skills that they need to have and the self-discipline and the work ethic, and I reflect back on my military service, and honestly, it's not too different, you know, in terms of learning the time management, the work ethic, the discipline, the key word, motivation. You know, you got to find a reason to get up every day. And, you know, when you serve in the military, you got those drill sergeants helping you out a little bit. But in college, if you don't get up every day, you're going home. It's the same end result. You either make it or you break it. And so I think having a military background is a huge advantage. And I think Charlton will bring these kids some techniques, some motivational techniques, in addition to his football expertise. I don't know if you saw the story I wrote, but at the bottom there was a video of Charlton when he was at North Carolina and he was mic'd up. And you can hear some of the coaching points that he's given these guys and how precise he is, you know, in terms of the footwork, the spacing, the techniques that he's teaching. It's exciting to see those type of things. And, you know, Kirby's teaching those things too. And, you know, I guess that's one of the unfortunate parts about, you know, Georgia closing practices. You don't really get an opportunity to watch how these coaches work. You know, you just see Kirby stand in front of a press conference and talk, but that really doesn't give you an essence of who he is. I think a better essence of who he is. I don't know, B.A., if you saw that video. I know we certainly couldn't play all the audio. But with some choice words were used about Kirby Smart being hungry. And that's the guy you get, a guy that motivates and inspires, a guy you want to fight for. And I think Charlton's going to add to that arsenal on that coaching staff.
Yeah, I may or may not have seen the Kirby Smart video in which you're referencing. I guess I'll be noncommittal on that. But I did get a chance to see the Charlton Warren video that you pushed to DogNation.com. And I was glad to see that look at him on the coaching field, because I do think that gives you another, you know, aspect of his personality. A guy, as you said, that certainly seems to be a pretty polished teacher of the game based on the work that he was doing there at UNC practice. Let me also mention this before we change the subject away from Charlton Warren. You know, you'd mentioned Derek Ansley. Dog Nation, your reporting had indicated that Ansley could have been in the mix for this job. We did hear about Corey Raymond interviewing, I guess not offered any kind of job at UGA, deciding to stay at LSU anyway. But that's another, to my mind, big name that was in the mix for this. When the bar is set at a Corey Raymond or a Derek Ansley, it's almost like Kirby Smart's doing himself a disservice and really disappointing fans if the hire isn't something of that same level. And for me, Mike, you know, speaking as a fan here for a moment, I do kind of find Charlton Warren to be a name that sort of fits into the Derek Ansley, you know, Corey Raymond conversation. Now, different fans may rate different guys as their preferred choice, but if you look at a guy that has sort of SEC recruiting experience as the benchmark for what Georgia wanted, by getting Charlton Warren, Kirby seems to have checked all those boxes. So from that standpoint, he set a high bar in terms of public perception, but he seems to have leapt across it.
Well, there's no doubt. And, you know, really, I don't know about Corey Raymond at LSU. I know he's been able to get those kids at Louisiana to go there. I don't know what kind of coach he is. But the fact of the matter is when, what we're really talking about is replacing Mel Tucker. And I don't know if there was another assistant coach in the country that was accomplished as Mel Tucker, you know, and it's one of those things where maybe Georgia, I don't want to say don't know what you got till it's gone, but I don't know if Mel Tucker was ever really celebrated as much as he should have been when you consider, I mean, here's a guy that had been an NFL defensive coordinator with the Bears and the Jaguars 10 years, coached on a national championship staff at Ohio State and at Alabama. They just don't get any better than Mel Tucker, and that's going to be the challenge for Charlton. Now, Charlton's different than Mel. He's going to bring a lot more energy. He's going to bring a different voice. But the whole key to what Charlton Warren can do, in addition to all these technical things we're talking about as a talent developer, is he's a motivator and he's a recruiter. It's hard to get coaches that can both teach technique and recruit. And that's what makes Charlton Warren such a rising star at 41 years old. And, you know, enjoy him while you can, because he's the kind of guy that in 3 or 4, maybe 5 years, is going to be a head coach somewhere. He's got that type of upside. You look at where he's been, B.A. We talk about the road that he took as a, not just as an Air Force football player, but also how about as a mechanic on airplanes, as you mentioned, his business acumen. This is a well-rounded person that goes beyond football. He's been at Nebraska. He's been at North Carolina. He's been at Tennessee. He's been at Florida. He's making all the stops. He keeps improving himself, going up, up, up. And now he's latched onto a football staff that's trying to turn into a dynasty. Now, it remains to be seen if that's going to happen. But one thing that has definitely happened this offseason is that the Georgia football staff has gotten younger and hungrier, and we will find out if they still have the expertise to compete for the national championship.
Let me stay on the coaching topic here for a moment to bring up the defensive coordinator situation. As you know, Georgia now has 10 coaches on staff, but no defensive coordinator has been announced. Now, I talked to Chip Towers about this on Monday, and it seems like there's a consensus here that Dan Lanning is going to get some portion of defensive coordinator control. He may get the whole thing. He may be co-defensive coordinator, but Lanning seems in line for promotion. And then it's just a matter of, is it Schumann who joins him? Is it maybe Charlton Warren who joins him in a co-role? Or is it Lanning all by himself here? Are those the three choices that seem to be out there for Georgia? And if that's all this is, then there's a chance we don't hear about this for a while from Kirby, right? I mean, Kirby's not, you know, keen on making announcements when he doesn't absolutely have to. If it's just one of those three choices that I laid out, then Georgia actually may take its time before it drops this announcement. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to know what Kirby's thinking, you know, with the staff filled out, but he hasn't named a defensive coordinator yet. You know, and let's look at what's behind curtain number 4 here. I mean, we're all assuming that there's going to be an internal promotion. Who's to say that there might not be one more piece of this puzzle? That there might not be one more move that's made, maybe somebody leaving, maybe somebody new coming in. I mean, I'm just not ready to say that he's going to have to promote from within. There may be, and I'm not, and I don't have any knowledge to this, BA, but it just makes me wonder. Now, we know that Kirby slow plays things. It could be a matter that, you know, he wants to go through spring drills and see how these guys sit in the room and work together, and wants to decide, you know, what the combination should be if he goes co-coordinator, if it's Dan Lanning or Glenn Schumann. It may be a situation where he just hasn't separated the money. I mean, Georgia, look, Kirby's sitting here with a pot of money. You know, let's do the math quickly here. You lose Mel Tucker at $1.5 million and Jim Chaney at $950,000. That's $2.45 million. You brought in a tight ends coach, you're paying $300,000, right? That's 2.15. Charlton Warren was due to make $400,000. Let's say he makes $600,000. That leaves $1.5 million that Kirby Smart has got to slice up. Who's going to get what money? I think he may need to sit down and talk to people, talk to his athletic director, plus whatever raise they were going to put in the pot. Yeah. So he might just need to figure out how this money's going to work before he starts throwing titles around and make sure everybody's good with it. Because there's a lot of people that are due raises. You know, nobody on his defensive staff outside of Mel was making over $500,000, and you've had 3 offensive coaches making over $800,000. So, you know, you got to get in the room and make sure everybody's feeling good about it. So I think Kirby's just slow playing it, but I'm not going to discount that wild card that maybe there's one move left that we don't see coming.
I think it's an interesting thing to think about. I think for a lot of Georgia fans, they're ready to put a full lid on this and call the coaching staff what it is, done and completed. But I guess here around these SEC parts, UGA included, I guess nothing's ever truly over, so we'll follow that and see where it goes. Mike, I want to talk to you about Mobile and the Senior Bowl here in a moment. Let me do something else before we get there, though. As you're now very well aware, the Georgia Bulldogs are going to be well represented in the Sugar Bowl. To say nothing of Boss Andrews, the Patriots center, you've got starting running backs on both teams that are former Georgia guys. Sony Michel's been great in his first year for the New England Patriots. Ty Gurley's among the very best players in the NFL for the LA Rams. How much does it help Georgia to have not just UGA running backs starring for both teams, but to have the game itself actually played in the state of Georgia? This would seem to be the kind of thing that happens for Georgia at a perfect time. Knowing how important running back is going to be for the class of 2020, to have Gurley and Michelle showcase the way they're about to be, this just seems like a no-brainer, big-time win for the overall perception of a school that likes to think of itself as RBU, right?
I think certainly it helps the perception that Georgia is RBU. I mean, you know, when you got two running backs in the Super Bowl, I mean, but to be honest, I'm not exactly sure how that translates on the pitch. Now, listen, I would agree 100%. It's just something for Georgia fans to celebrate. It's something to experience. It gives you a rooting interest. It's a source of pride to see your former players. But I would make this point. Tom Brady and Peyton Manning are two of the best quarterbacks that ever played the game, and that hasn't translated for Tennessee and Michigan to land great quarterbacks in the last 10 years, quite frankly. So as much as we'd like to say that this is going to translate on the recruiting trail, I think these players, especially nowadays with social media, you know, they're more interested in where they can play right away. They're more interested in what, you know, opportunities they're going to have, and they're more knowledgeable now than ever. Now, I think this is something that in the 1990s, I know for a fact that Peyton Manning's stature influenced many recruits to come to Tennessee, but there wasn't the same level of knowledge about all the different programs back then, and television exposure meant so much more. Now everybody's on TV. Everybody's got a YouTube video. Every coaching staff is aware of every player because of these camps. So to your point, I think it certainly helps brand Georgia, which in a roundabout way helps recruiting. You can certainly make the case RBU with Gurley and Sony Michel in the Super Bowl, and that branding will have some carryover, but as far as the direct effect, I'm not quite sure that it'll translate right away, but I do think it raises Georgia's certainly raises the stature, and it's something that Georgia fans should celebrate and take a lot of pride in.
You're in Mobile, Alabama. Senior Bowl coming up this weekend there. Practice is ongoing right now. You've had a chance to already talk to Jonathan Ledbetter. We also got some bad news in terms of DeAndre Walker's, I guess, lack of availability, dealing with the fact that he's still battling a little bit of an injury. What do you make of the scene down there in Mobile right now? What have you learned, and what can you tell UGA fans about the proceedings as these Georgia guys try to make names for themselves moving on to the NFL?
Well, you know, you saw that story. They really like DeAndre Walker. You know, the guy that's the Senior Bowl executive director was a regional scout for 5 years for the Seattle Seahawks, and I didn't know what I would get when I asked him in a room full of people about DeAndre Walker with Walker not being here. But the fact that he's willing to sing the praises and talk about how good this guy is that's not even playing in his game, that tells you how good Walker is and how legit it is. I suppose if there's really bad news here, it's that DeAndre Baker's not here to compete. And I know that Baker skipped the Sugar Bowl to stay healthy and felt good about the stock. I'm sure he's got an agent telling him that. But I've seen him going from number 10 in the projection to number 30 in the last week. DeAndre Baker is not a combine guy, I don't think. Now, he could surprise me and run a 4.3 or maybe vertical 39, but I don't see that happening. He's a football player, and he could have come out here and shown that he was a football player against the best receivers in the country one-on-one, like a Deebo Samuel, who, by the way, is lighting it up and looking incredible. So I feel bad that DeAndre Baker might have got some bad advice from his agent to skip these games. And look, I understand how these agents work. You know, they want the money, and, you know, they say, DeAndre Baker, you're taking a risk by playing. Guess what? The agent takes a risk by him playing too. And, you know, maybe it doesn't matter to the agent if he goes from 10 to 30, but I know the kind of competitor that DeAndre Baker is, and I know that it's killing him that he didn't play in the Sugar Bowl and he had to stand on the sidelines and watch his team lose a football game he could have helped him win. And I know it's bothering him that he's not down here competing right now. You only get to do this once, BA, and I feel bad that DeAndre Baker missed this opportunity to compete in the Senior Bowl.
We will see how that impacts his draft future going forward. Mike, we appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily, and we will look forward to speaking to you on the program again here very soon as well.
Thanks, BA. I appreciate it.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
A couple interesting points I want to get into from what Mike said before we do our SEC Through. I'm going to try to make these pretty quick. He talks about the idea of these Georgia assistant coaches being due for raises. And y'all know how I feel about this. I don't have a problem with facilities. I don't have a problem with building buildings. I don't have a problem with any of that kind of stuff. But if that big, you know, windfall of cash in a program like Georgia, the thing I want to see that money used for more than anything else is for retaining quality assistant coaches. To me, that's the fuel that drives these programs these days, not just Georgia, but everywhere else. I mentioned yesterday that right now I think we're in a time in which the number of high-quality assistant coaches that can work with these hard-driving head coaches has never seemed smaller, and it's a finite, limited resource. So when you've got guys, you've got to spend the money to keep them. So that's a good way for Georgia to spend its money. I believe there's no other more important way for UGA to spend its money than that. Build a bigger, giant weight room, or spend some money to keep a guy like Sam Pittman employed, or a guy like Glenn Schumann happy and employed. The money spent on the coach will always be the money best spent. Mike also mentions the, at least maybe it's a remote possibility, but at least the possibility that somehow the defensive coordinator name at Georgia can still be an outside name. Now, as many of you are aware, that would require someone from this current Georgia coaching staff being gone to do that. All I can say from the perspective of someone who watches this as a fan, I'm happy with the 10 coaches Georgia has right now. I am. I'm happy with just promoting one of those names defensive coordinator and keeping the other, you know, nine guys in place. If this is the staff that Georgia has for 2019, and I sort of hope it is, I'm kind of happy with that. I didn't really care who had the name offensive coordinator. The Georgia offense is going to look the way it's going to look, and the recruiting machine is going to operate the way that it does. I feel the same way about defense. You can give them all co-DC titles as far as I'm concerned, or you can draw the defensive coordinator name out of a hat. It's all of these coaches. They're going to have an influence over that defensive philosophy, and for me, I'm sort of fine with that. And then one more thing that Mike brought up that I think also has to be mentioned. You know, he is right about the way that sometimes programs try to overuse the branding of, like, running back university. That kind of gimmick recruiting does not work as much as some programs think that it does. I'm a big believer that it's really relationships that coaches establish with players over the course of years that lead to more signed letters of intent than anything else. But in the case of Georgia, it can't hurt, especially when you see guys like Kendall Milton, 2020 five-star running back, who has already noticed and tweeted out about the presence of a Gurley and a Michelle in the Super Bowl. In Georgia's case, seeing as it does seem to be pretty good at building those relationships, the extra branding of having running backs in the Super Bowl, that probably ends up being a pretty good thing. All right, before we do our SEC through, let me remind you, there is a big game coming to Atlanta, and Kroger is ready to help you get stocked up for everything you need to throw the best party. After all, for a lot of these neighborhoods, that's the biggest day of the year, that big Super Bowl party, or I should say big game party, and you want to make sure that you've got yours ready to go, and that it's you know, loaded up with chicken wings, baby back ribs, all the snacks you need. It's all there for you right there at your local Kroger's. Getting ready for the big game, nobody's better at helping you do that than our friends at Kroger. A couple SEC stories to get to here. I saw where now, I guess, former Texas A&M quarterback Nick Starkle is now going to transfer out of the program. He'll be a grad transfer. I believe he's got 2 years of eligibility at his new school. And I think this is the kind of thing that has the chance to really change the fortunes of the program that gets Starkle. Starkle is a guy that, not in 2018, but in 2017, won a tough competition to become Texas A&M starting quarterback. This is a pretty capable guy. It certainly seems like Jimbo Fisher, the A&M coach, has cast his lot with Kellen Mond. Easy to understand why. Mond was a pretty good prospect and showed some flashes in 2018. But Starkle can play. And for most teams in the country, he's an upgrade over what they could have at quarterback. So in terms of watching the fortunes of a program be greatly changed here, seeing where Nick Starkle ends up going could be a very interesting thing to think about, as this transfer quarterback market does not, that those wheels do not appear to have stopped spinning as of yet. Starkle's a pretty good game to have on the open market right now. I saw where Shiloh Sanders, the son of Deion Sanders and a pretty good looking 2019 defensive back, has committed to South Carolina. At one point in time, you heard Shiloh's name come into the fold in the mix with Georgia just a bit. I think that was more due with the fact that I do believe that Georgia is interested in his brother, Shador Sanders, who's a 2021 quarterback. That's always been the name I think that Georgia was the most interested in. But you heard Shiloh's name connected with Georgia for a while. This is actually, for me, what has turned out to be a little bit of a rare you know, headline for South Carolina in these regards. They did get Zach Pickens, which is not a bad get. But for the most part, Muschamp has not really established the recruiting momentum at South Carolina that I would have expected him to. But we'll see what Shiloh Sanders does in a garnet and black uniform. We'll do one more SEC story here. I saw where ESPN, I guess 24/7 Sports, are also reporting that Holman Wiggins, who has been the Virginia Tech wide receivers coach, is also, I guess, on his way to Alabama to become the Alabama wide receivers coach. This is a guy that's been around the block a lot, but not really at the major college level. Before his time at Virginia Tech, he was with Justin Fuente at Memphis, and then before that at schools like New Mexico. This is another an example of what Saban seems to have been doing a lot lately, hiring experienced coaches but not necessarily known as elite recruiters. When you're at Memphis and New Mexico, you're just not doing a lot of that. Virginia Tech recruits at the highest level, or at least they attempt to, sort of tapping into that Hampton Roads area. But this is another example of, if it is indeed going to be Wiggins who gets that job, that's going to end up being more about that experience on-field stuff than the recruiting stuff, which leads me to believe, and I know this was kind of a hot topic on the Feinbaum Show yesterday, that Nick Saban right now is operating on a short-term scenario. In fact, let me close up the SEC through and kind of get into that a little bit, because I have certainly heard plenty of reaction from this yesterday, my appearance on the Feinbaum Show. Now, I guess let me start with this before we get into the Saban part of this. I think end up on the show because of the dust up that had happened with the Kentucky radio guy. We talked about that yesterday, and you know what he had said about Dog Nation. And listen, I got to stick up for my guys here. I got to stick up for my website. And so the subject of the guy who said, you know, the Dog Nation thing about Eddie Grant, and was he going to be offensive coordinator at Georgia? Was he offered the job? And you know, for me, it's just sort of disappointing to see the Bluegrass State grasping onto this. And I essentially told Feinbaum as much about that yesterday. Here's a little taste of me from the Feinbaum Show yesterday.
All I got to say, I did hear about the radio guy yesterday saying these things about Dog Nation, and I have to admit I was a little disappointed. You know, is this what the state of the Bluegrass State has now become? You know, this is supposed to be basketball season. This is supposed to be Kentucky's time to shine. I mean, has Tennessee really just nudged Kentucky off its basketball perch so much that they're, you know, in the SEC, that they're now grasping to this, you know, Eddie Grant rumor as their claim to fame here during this football offseason? I have to say, if that's what the state of Kentucky's about now, I'm a little disappointed in that.
So that's what I thought I was going on the show to talk about yesterday, and we kind of got into that a little bit. But then the subject does veer in the direction of Alabama. If you're watching on video, we showed you the tweet a moment ago that Feinbaum sent out about what I had said, because the question came up about some of the coaching changes that Alabama's made. Now, listen, you got to understand my philosophy on stuff like this. If I'm going to tell y'all something on this show, and then I go on a different show, if I were to say something different there than I've been saying here, that sort of makes me inauthentic. So I got to keep it, you know, true to myself and true to the things we've been talking about. And, you know, I told you from the very get-go, if you're a program that has a defensive coordinator like Tosh Lapoy, a guy who has been greatly influential on some of the best players on the Alabama roster, and some of the guys that are going to be on this roster in 2019, you can draw a line between those guys and Tosh Lapoy. If you're Nick Saban and you're recruiting for the long haul, you do not get rid of an assistant coach like Tosh Lapoy. He may be going to the Cleveland Browns for right now, but by 2020, he's back coaching somewhere and major college football again, because he's that good of a recruiter. And if you're looking to be at a program for the next five, or certainly in the case next 10 years, a guy like Tosh Lapoy is a guy that you want to be very close with. Did he have some problems as an on-field defensive coach? There have been plenty of reports that that Alabama took some of the responsibilities away from him over the course of the season. That's fine. But if you're in for the long haul, you're growing that guy, you're developing that guy, you're making the best you can. The fact that that's not what Saban chose to do with Tosh Lapoy leads me to believe that Saban's thinking short-term more so than long-term. And I said as much on the Feinbaum Show yesterday. A lot of Alabama fans weren't too happy about it. If you missed the conversation, here is some of it.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, it'd be obviously very wise for Kirby Smart to sort of paint the contrast between he and Saban. Smart is new in his career. He's a young, energetic figure. And I no doubt imagine that he tries to use that as his sales pitch on the recruiting trail. And there is a pretty sharp contrast between that and Saban right now, which no matter how you slice it, is in the winter of his career. And I do believe that some of the moves that you've seen, I heard the interview yesterday with the reporter who mentioned the feeling that they had gone too far in the direction of recruiting. I think the quick response to that, the change that had been made, certainly make it seem like that Saban's operating right now on a short-term plan. It's not a five-year plan of, you know, what's the situation going to be like years down the road. This would seem to be an execution of maximizing the opportunity and winning as much as you can right now with the very talented roster that's amassed in Tuscaloosa. To me, from the outside looking in, that's what this appears to be. That's not reporting. That's just my opinion. But it certainly seems like Saban is trying to maximize this short-term opportunity he has in front of him and would lead me to believe that he sees the end of his coaching career at Alabama coming sooner rather than later.
Now, listen, this is one of those things that's not necessarily a problem as we get ready to wrap up the program here today. This is not necessarily a problem. In some respects, it's kind of a smart thing to do. If you've got this much talent, Alabama faces a very favorable schedule in 2019. Their non-conference game is Duke. Their other non-conference games are a total joke. Maybe lining up and trying to win as much as you can while you've still got Tua Tagovailoa, maybe that makes a lot of sense. Because I don't care, you know, what anybody says, the other quarterbacks in line after Tua, including his own brother, I don't believe are anywhere near the same level of quarterback prospect. So maybe this is just the smart thing for Alabama to do. But nonetheless, that's what I believe Alabama is doing. And so I guess from the Georgia perspective on this, it's simply a matter of, does Georgia wait, bide its time, and take advantage of the SEC landscape once Saban is gone? Or does it do its part to kind of help usher Saban into a retirement? That could be one of the fun stories and interesting stories to look at as we head towards the 2019 season. Of course, that's not the only rival that Georgia's battling. There's also those lousy, stinking Gators as well, and I'm happy to report it's now been 816 days since Florida has beaten Georgia. It's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.